myself that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GER. This is the football show on a Monday with myself and Conan, and Keane is not here. Stephen McDonald is here on a Monday for a change. Fair play to you, Stevie. You came
no
in, helped us out with Keane. Not usually not here, but today he couldn't make
anything for the cause, you know.
Yeah, great stuff. You're a real team player, there's no doubt. Come here, Liz, what a day we had yesterday. Like, I mean, I say this at the after the last round of every National League. When you have all these results coming in, and I watched the Mayo Donegal match, and I had Radio 1 on, and they were going around to all the grounds, and there was bloody action. Cavan went up with a last minute point. Mayo stayed up with a last minute point. Fermanagh went up with a last minute point. Monaghan beat Dublin for the first time in 12 years with a last minute point, and all this is rushing in, and you're like, Jesus, imagine if we had this in June, when there really is a lot riding on all these games, and when all Ireland titles are on the line. And I'm not going to get into this again. It's just very frustrating that by far and away this is by far the best competition that the league has, and yesterday was just absolute proof of that. No,
very enjoyable. Just enjoy it as it is, and I will enjoy the championship.
Yeah, will we enjoy the championship?
We always do.
When the Super 8s come around, we will. But like, I mean, we won't really outside of the odd game. Like, I mean,
yeah, but maybe something like having all the provincial finals, whatever, at the same time, like yesterday as well, as to the excitement, because there was something, you know.
But it wouldn't be on the same time, though, Stevie.
I know, but if they were at the same time, like yesterday's games, you know, it adds to the excitement coming in. You watch Soccer Saturday with the results coming in. There's always last minute excitement on that there program. So yesterday was very similar to that there with the last minute points going on around the country, and it was great to see.
Yeah, so we want to start with the Mayo escape. Of course, Kevin McLaughlin took 12 steps, I counted.
13,
maybe
I counted.
Maybe 13, you counted.
Yeah, 13,
I
counted.
Let's say
as
13.
Well. Unlucky for Donegal.
I mean, well, obviously was unlucky, and I saw Declan Bonner on the field remonstrating with the referee, and I didn't spot McLaughlin in real time over carrying, because I think the camera was behind him, and you couldn't really see what he was doing with the ball as much, and you were more kind of getting carried away in what was going on here than how many steps were being taken. But I think Joe Brawley made a good point on Twitter, and he said that he made very purposeful steps. Like, and you often notice with lads, if you're over carrying, that if it looks like you've got a good bit of intent, it's often you're caught over carrying when you almost pause because out of guilt that you kind of know.
Yeah.
Another thing that always helps over carrying is if you're tackled. If you ride a tackle, you're usually allowed 3 or 4 when you come out of the tackle, and McLaughlin's hand was grabbed at one stage of it.
Yeah.
Then he cleverly held out the ball like he was about to shoot and took 4 more steps as he prepared to shoot. So he really kind of, a lot of boxes were ticked to get away with this.
I don't think he purposely done it, though. I think he would.
Oh, I have a feeling he did. I have a feeling he knew right well, because he lined up to shoot.
Yeah.
He took 4.5 more steps as he lined up. When you line up to shoot, I'd say he's like, I need to get a little bit closer, I'm on my right foot. But he showed an awful lot of nerve and an awful lot of balls to do that.
To go on his weaker side, right foot, you know, at a critical stage of the game. You know, he knew that if he kicked that and the ball went wide, that Mayo were relegated. You know, it was a fantastic score.
Yeah.
Fantastic nerve to go for that opportunity. But at the end of the day, and I didn't see it in real time either. I watched the game, I didn't see it in real time. He did overcarry the ball and should have been a free out. But, you know, you have to give the referee some credit. We didn't see it watching the TV.
No,
he couldn't have seen it in real time. So it was certainly a difficult one to call. But looking back on hindsight, you have to say that Donegal were hard done by.
They definitely were hard done by. I don't think there's any question about that. But Kevin McLaughlin, because he is a bit of an unsung hero, I'm a huge, huge fan of his. Yeah. Not only is he a smart, clever player, he's lightning speed, and he does it for Mayo, but doesn't always do it in a spectacular way that he's making, you know, huge headlines. Like in last year's All-Ireland final, he was outstanding. He was outstanding for a lot of last year. Did he get an All-Star? Did he get an All-Star?
He certainly got one in the last few years anyway. I think he is one of those players that is very underrated, and he does and a serious amount of work for Mayo. But I'll tell you what, he's got a brilliant knack of doing, taking a man on one-on-one. He has a great way of actually going by a man and making it look so easy, but he keeps things simple. He simplifies the game very much so for Mayo, and he's very, very effective for them.
And I saw a tweet from Kieran Cunningham, and he said 7 years after saving Mayo's bacon in London. So he got Mayo out of jail in London. And last year, Kieran Shannon replied back to Kieran Cunningham, and he said he scored the injury time winner in Oma last year too, and it was a great score. And I only remember, didn't remember that until I read it. So, like, I mean, this lad is a serious kind of bit of guts about him.
Yeah, and didn't get the All Star.
Didn't get the
All-Star. Dean Rock, remember, number 10.
There you go. Yeah. How did I not remember that? Because a big pet peeve of mine is not being picked in the bloody position. And he was the outstanding 10. He got a Woolley Award, if that's any good to him. He got on the Woolley All Star team. Because Mayo back again, I questioned last, was it Thursday, Stevie, we were talking about what motivates Mayo anymore? You know what I mean? Or maybe it was the previous Monday. What motivates this team? They've been in All Ireland finals. Like, do league games motivate this core of players? They've no squads, so they're not worried about their positions. They need their backs to the wall. Yeah. They need kind of their necks on the line to pull out a performance. And I thought Mayo played very well against a really good on-form Donegal team. Yeah. In their home patch where they haven't been beaten in God knows how long. So, like, I mean, Mayo need, and they'll be up for the Galway game because they've been beaten a few times. Mayo just need that extra bit. They need to get into Super 8s. They need a motivation. And I don't think early rounds of leagues are motivating these lads, because if they play bad, they're still going to be on the championship team.
Possibly not. And I'm with some of the players that weren't even on the Mayo team yesterday. You have to give them huge credit. They've got serious character. I think we've spoke quite often over the last couple of years about the character that Mayo have. When their backs are against the wall, that's when they produce their best football.
Yeah.
And they come up with the goods. And yesterday was another prime example of it. They were 3 points down going into the 10 minutes of the game, and they managed to find something within to get themselves back level.
Yeah, and it's no surprise, Conan, is it?
No, like a point in the face is what motivates them. You know, it seems to be the harder they get hit, the harder they come back. And I mean, you look at like all the laws of physics and the logic and all the stats and the analysis that we do, Mayo exist outside of that. Like, I didn't even think they were that good yesterday. Looked a little bit sluggish. I was thinking they're missing 5 defenders from last year's final. 2 midfielders still look, they need to get a bit of fitness back, but it doesn't matter, like, you know, because we're not surprised anymore by how surprising they are. Like, and they will be the same in the championship.
And again, we put all the results in context. I was like, there's no point in writing these lads off because they've made eejits out of too many people for the last 2 or 3 years, when like this writing them off has been happening for 2 or 3 years. But again, Mark O'Shea and Colin Murrough fell into the trap they wrote on Sunday, and they wrote them off, and it says they're going nowhere. And Mark O'Shea surprisingly was very kind of critical of them. He says, question is not whether Mayo will survive today, but rather how they will cope with relegation. I'm sorry if I'm crushing hopes of Mayo supporters, but who will no doubt travel in big numbers to Ballybuffet. They will lose today, but even if somehow the survivor instinct gets them across the line, it won't change the truth that they're living on borrowed time. I don't think they are living on borrowed time. I don't think that this team has much time left. That's fair enough. So I don't know if it's as drastic as borrowed time. I think in 3 more years this Mayo team will be gone. I think that's fair enough. They've only got it this year, maybe, and next year, I think, to win that All-Ireland that they need so much, because they don't have much coming through. But I still don't think, they're not the oldest team in the world. I don't think this should be written off to that extent.
Possibly not. No, listen, there's still some unbelievable players come back into that Mayo team, and you know, maybe Mark was being a wee bit harsh on them there with his comments, but I think, listen, there is certainly a couple of years left in them. They have quality players, they have young players as well. Jamie O'Connor is still a very young player. They've got young talent coming through, not probably to the extent that the likes of Dublin or Kerry have, but they have young talent coming through, and they'll still be there for the next couple of years. But yes, it's their time to win the All-Ireland has got to be in the next year or two, you would imagine, for this current crop of players, because they've been there to All-Ireland finals, so they know what it takes to get to a final, but they just haven't got across that line yet. So they have to find something within, in the damn minutes of an All-Ireland final, to get them across that line.
Yeah, and they seem to be able to do well. They have to find that. I want to move on from that though, because you have to leave soon enough, Stevie. Fermanagh had this great escape, and this, I thought this was interesting, and this what drove me demented on League Sunday last night, and kind of I don't like criticising them anymore. I don't see any point in it, but I couldn't help it last night, because I was reading reports on this game, and by all accounts it was a disputed free, so there was a kick out, and people thought that the game might be blown up after the kick out. But Fermanagh went up to contest the kick out, and apparently a Longford player kind of tackled the man rather than the ball. Longford are disputing this, but the foul happened 3 or 4 yards on outside the 45. By the time Seamus Quigley kicked the 45, he was 2 yards inside it.
Yeah.
So there's a whole dramatic ending to this game of whether it was a free, number one. Seamus robbing yard, then an unbelievable kick. So the whole build up, he didn't put that into his bloody report. And why did he not? So like, I mean, why not show 2 more minutes of that game, more scores, more of a narration of how the game ebbed and flowed, and the same with Tipperary Cavan? And why are you wasting time analysing Dublin Monaghan? Why does anybody give a shit about that? Dublin were out, they picked out half a team. Yes, it was a fairly good win for Monaghan, but you can't read anything into it because Dublin didn't care. Why analyse that? Then they looked forward to the league final. Why are we looking forward to the league final? We've just had a brilliant, dramatic, exciting last day. Show us more highlights of that and stop the talking in studio. You've got good pundits, you've got a good presenter. The production team, again, is letting that show down. They're making the wrong decisions. They're not hitting the pitch of what people want to see on a, nothing from Laois Carlow, which was outrageous considering that was the big game in Division 4. Now, maybe it saved Carlow and Laois's embarrassment. By all accounts, it was an absolutely horrific game. But show us the horrific game. Show us the extent of how bad it was. Show us something. Like, why not save that league final chat? Because nobody wants to preview a game on a review night. Wait till next week. You won't get to preview it if you're on League Sunday. You'll review. But show us the League Carlow or the Laois Carlow highlights. What is going on?
It's becoming a little bit like, you know, the big screen at the live games at Croke Park or, you know, the Aviva for soccer, and they don't show the controversial incidents. Like, you want to highlight it. Now, I know that's controversy, but, like, you know, looking at Dublin Galway last week, they didn't show any of the real drama that was supposed to have happened. Liam Casey gets sent off for Tipperary. Massive, massive moment in that game. Tipperary could be in Division 1 if they had 15 men. Yeah. Didn't show that. No,
I'd like to have seen more highlights of that game as well. Yeah.
So there were these incidents all over the country that weren't being picked up.
Yeah.
Like, Derry got relegated as well. You know, if we're going to start talking about our own counties, but what is going on there as well? Yeah. So much more than.
Yeah, there was quite a lot happened that we didn't see.
So much happened.
There was analysis, all right. There was some coverage of the Fermanagh game, but not to the extent that we wanted to really see. You know, we wanted to see. I suppose Fermanagh's comeback. We wanted to see what put Longford in front as well. You know, we wanted to see more of that game because that there was a lot riding on that game. So there was, and you have to admire Fermanagh for how they come back as well. They were like Mayo, a couple of points behind, but to have a character and a spirit about themselves this year under Rory Gallagher that, you know, they never seemed to be beat until the final whistle, and you have to give them tremendous credit for coming back and winning the game the way they did.
Didn't even show the kick out and dramatic foul, and like, I mean, they could have brought the whole excitement of that to life, but they didn't. But here, this is what I wanted to bring up from you. So look, people in Longford are very disappointed, right? And I want to throw this point to you. So the referee was from Ulster, right? They played Armagh earlier on in the league. The referee was from Ulster. Now, you can explain this to me because I know how sensitive you are about Ulster, and I know that you're the one province that when an Ulster team wins something and goes to Croke Park, the whole province will row in behind them. Like, if Offaly wins something, Laois won't necessarily row in behind them. That's not the culture in Leinster. It's like we're still rivals. But Ulster, and I think it's from years of coming down to Croke Park and not winning until obviously the 90s when that all changed and then you won more than you lost, but you all rowing behind each other, so that culture of we're in it together is there. So could that affect an Ulster referee refereeing a Fermanagh Longford who goes up to Division 2?
Quite possibly, there's no doubt about it, because
He was from down. The referee was Paul Falloon. I'd never heard of him.
I know Paul well, and Paul is a really, really good referee, and he will be one of the top referees in the country in the coming years.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that he influenced that game yesterday whatsoever.
I'm just saying. I don't want to highlight him. I think
maybe Paul Falloon possibly should have been given a different game yesterday. We experienced this exact same last year when Armagh played Tipperary in the last game. It was a clear referee in that game, and there's no way with the importance of those games, particularly when Fermanagh and Longford, there was so much riding on it, there should not be a referee from the same province referee in those really, really important games. Give Paul Falloon Dublin or not Dublin Monaghan because he's an Ulster man, but give him a high caliber game. Absolutely, that was the type of game that maybe gave him yesterday. But in terms of Paul Falloon as a referee, he's definitely one of the best referees up and coming in the country at the minute, and I would have no criticism about him. One thing that I like about
you didn't see the incident, so you can't necessarily have criticism.
I want to say, but the one thing I do like about him, and it's gone from a lot of the referees in the country, Paul lets contact. He allows contact and he allows a good hard hitting game, and that's what you want from referees across the country now.
Okay, what's your take on this, Conan? Do you think you accept that an Ulster referee might, the emotion of an Ulster team getting into Division 2 might weigh on his mind a little bit in that kind of really pressurised situation?
Maybe I don't mind seeing Ulster teams do well. I do like it. It's sort of like, well, we'll show them even when it's not my county. But I mean, there's also, if it was a Monaghan referee and it was Tyrone playing, I mean, I'm not going to expect him to be so keen to get Tyrone to win. Like, there's also on the other side of it that argument where an Ulster referee shouldn't be doing that game, because I think there'd be a lot of rivalry there as well.
Yeah, but I suppose when you go back to Pat McEnany's time refereeing, Pat McEnany got a lot of big games. I can remember us playing Dublin, for instance, when the day Stephen Cluxton got sent off and Pat McEnany was referee then. Should Pat have got that game? Possibly not, but he was by far the best referee in the country at that stage, so that's the reason why he was maybe getting the high profile games.
Yeah, and look, referees are supposed to be professional enough to rise above this type of thing. Yeah. But I do think, Stevie, you have a good point. I think Longford going up to Armagh and getting an Ulster ref, Longford playing Fermanagh in two really important games. Is there not enough referees to share around that they cannot do their own province, or not even have this debate even, or this kind of argument to even come up?
Listen, to save debates like this, it should be a referee from a different province altogether when there's so much importance riding on the game.
Yeah, so Cavan needed a last minute point. Conor Madden, he kicked the winner against Tipperary, which was apparently a great game. We didn't get enough of a sense of that either, because Liam Kearns was complaining about all the wides that they kicked. They scored 210, they've been averaging 216, 217 the whole way through the league, and he said they'd left their shooting boots at home. You didn't really get that sense. You don't really get the sense if you were putting, see, this is the difference, like, and you always talk about match of the day, and look, they're able to show highlights. My game might be one bloody nil, there might be three chances. You can't compare, like it is very difficult to get a game that's 210 to 17 points and put that in a 2 minute package. So you're going to have to spread that out to 4 minutes and get some flavour of how it's going and cut down on the talking. I don't think people want talking because they're only sound bites anyways. Ah, Fermanagh are going well, they're a very defensive team. GAA fans know that. Like, I mean, you don't need someone to, you don't need to pay someone to tell you that. But like, it is just disappointing. But Division 2 next year, lads, I want to mention this because this is beyond belief how difficult, because we talked this year about it being up for grabs, nobody really knows who the favourites were or whatever. Well, Cavan and Roscommon are gone out of it, but Kildare and Donegal have come into it, and Fermanagh and Armagh have come into it. So now you're looking at Kildare, Donegal, Clare, Cork, Tipperary, Meath, Fermanagh and Armagh. That's now the group of death.
Yeah.
So there's going to be two big names going back down out of that now again.
Yeah, and that's exactly the standard of football that you want to be playing at. You know, there's no doubt that Division 2 is going to be, you know, top quality football next year, but so is Division 1. You know, there's going to be two quality teams coming back down from Division 1 as well. And, you know, I suppose from an Armagh point of view, I'm just delighted that Armagh are back up playing a better quality of team, because for the improvement of Armagh, they've got to be playing the likes of a Cork or a Tipperary on a regular basis.
Armagh are a yo-yo team now though, Stevie. Like, they're up and down there the whole
time. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not, disputing that whatsoever. But Armagh, to stabilise themselves, they have to be playing regular Division 2 football and trying to get themselves closer towards Division 1 to become, more prominent in the years to come. Because they have a young, talented bunch of players that we've spoke about, that I've often spoke about, and that's the level that they need to be playing at. They can't be going from Division 2 to Division 3 on a yo-yo basis the way we have been the last 8-9 years. And, you know, they have to have that consistency in their game, and they're going to be tested fully next year with the quality teams in Division 2.
Yeah, so I mentioned Laois and Carlow. And the stats don't make for good reading on this, so I was going to go over to this, and then I went, will I get back in time for Mayo Donegal? And obviously Mayo Donegal is more important for the podcast here than Carlow Laois. Maybe not, as it turns out. It could have actually been able to talk about, but G wouldn't have seen it anyways. Without getting into this, which is completely irrelevant, the stats are damning, really, lads. So only one Carlow player scored in the entire game. That was Paul Broderick. 8 points he got, and six frees, one sideline, one from play. 1 point from play in the entire game, right? Laois only had 1 point in the entire second half. I think that was in the 68th minute. Carlow played against 14 men for the last 15 minutes, and that's when they scored 3 points. They'd only scored five up until then. Like, I mean, Laois apparently passed the ball all the way around the outside. Laois went 5 points early on, and Laois didn't engage with Carlow at all. And I think they're absolutely right. I think any team going against these ultra defensive teams, the onus is not on you necessarily to go into that contact. Play the ball around. You have possession. The onus is on them to come out and try and engage with you and try and get the ball back off you. Like, I mean, it's always the case that the crowd will boo. There's no doubt the crowd is going to boo. But like, why do Laois give a damn about the game looking stupid? This is not the tactics that they're bringing to the game. This is a product of what the other team has been, you know what I mean, is bringing to the game. So like Sugru said after the game, said the game against Dublin last year showed that they haven't changed an awful lot since. In the second half, they defended a bit higher up the pitch and we didn't get as much change out of that as we should have got. But we're out the gap and the gap is all that we wanted. Like, I mean, so you're basically looking at a game between two evenly enough, Laois were 1-3 favourites going into the game. So I don't think they're still, talent-wise, Laois probably still ahead, although the gap is closing. But the game was just a little bit of a farce, really.
I agree with you. That's what a team should do when they're faced with a blanket. Just let them come out, especially when you're in the lead. I remember Derry going in 3-2 ahead of Dublin back when they were a Division 1 team at half time, getting booed off the pitch. Yeah. But I was so proud, like thinking they're like Dublin. Derry were the most defensive team that day, but Dublin still had 14 men behind the ball, and Derry weren't taking into contact and kicking it down their throat. So wait for them to come up.
Derry were the instigators.
They were, but like, and again, then I don't like falling into that like they're to blame, and because everybody is defensive. Like, you look at Dublin, they're one of the most defensive.
They're not.
Like,
when Dublin play Kerry, it's almost a 15-on-15 unless there's attacking players and
they
end
have to
up
get
back
men
there.
Back because defenders are so attacking these days. You have to get back.
But a defensive team by nature is one that will have full time sweepers and sets up in your offensive. They don't just fall back because they have to chase runners. This is one that actually retreats.
Dublin are a hard working team, so they are. They work up and down the field.
But I hate when Dublin are thrown into that because that's completely wrong.
I would disagree with that they're a defensive team as well. I would say they've got players that get back into defensive positions but get up and support the attack as soon as they've got the ball. And that doesn't mean
that they're really good at defence.
But there is defensive teams that hold back and keep positions in the defensive zone and don't tend to move out of that defensive zone
until you come into them. That's
Dublin
not what
are totally different. But teams.
But so what? Like, why are we making Dublin out to be the good guys? Like, they're not doing that.
They're the best in the country at the minute, and you have to admire what they do and how to go about it. You look at how they approached Tyrone last year in the All Ireland semi final. You know, there was nothing defensive about that. There, they spread the ball around. They were mature. They were patient, and that's what you've got to do with teams that are defensive and set up defensive. You've got to show, I suppose, a level of patience and spread the ball around, like Laois done yesterday to an extent, and invite your opponents on to you. And once that their opening is there, go for it. And that's what Dublin do effectively well.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think Colin's in a bad mood today because of our next subject, Derry being relegated. So this is an awful fall from grace, and this has happened. Westmeath have gone straight from 1 down to 4. Laois had a pretty fairly fast fall as well, not quite in 4 years, but like I think it was in 5 maybe it was in 5. So Derry were in the Division 1 final in 2014, right? They got hammered by Dublin. They had a great league, they put a big effort into it. 2015 was it the final? Then 16 relegated.
14 final, yeah. They were 15 relegated.
16 relegated, 17 relegated, 18 relegated. So now here they are in Division 4. Like, I mean, so it can happen to anyone. Like, this is the thing. Like, in fairness to Armagh, they always perform well in Division 3. Now, I know they didn't get out of it last year, but the other 2 years they bounced straight back out. And you give Cavan an awful lot of credit and Roscommon for coming out of Division 1. Bang, straight back in, because you can easily fall on a slippery slope there. Like, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do, is to be relegated and then get back up in the slog and it's not what you're used to, and then you just have to try and get like Laois have just bounced straight back out of 4, but they got a consecutive relegation. Yep. So like Derry are in Division 4 now, and like the Division 4 teams won't thank you for saying this. It was embarrassing for Derry football. It was embarrassing for Laois football, and Laois don't have the history and, you know, the prestige that Derry football has, being All-Ireland winners in 1993 and having that brilliant team. So like, I'd imagine, Conan, it's embarrassing for you. Paddy Bradley said it's a sad day, some serious questions need to be asked. He's given out about the county board. Enda Lynn came back to him on Twitter last night saying you were always criticising ever since you were dropped or whatever, and there was a bit of a spat going on between the Derry captain and Paddy Bradley.
Yeah, there was spats going on all over the internet last night. It's really embarrassing, and like, I can say no disrespect to the other teams, but it is a little bit disrespectful. You look at the fixtures for next year, and it's Limerick, it's Leitrim, it's Wicklow, and it's just depressing. Like, Derry are having enough trouble getting the best players out. It's going to be even harder now next year to get boys like up for
a
game.
I look at from the outside looking at Derry, and like consistently over the last 4 or 5 years, their minors have been going to Croke Park to quarter final, semi final, and All Ireland final stage. Like, so the talent is there. Slot Neil have been one of the best teams.
That's
the one for me.
If you can't backbone the Derry team with five Slot Neil winners, there's something wrong.
So what exactly is it that Derry are lacking at the minute? Why do these players not want to go and represent their county at a higher level? I remember watching the St Pat's Maharad team dominate McCrory Cup finals from a few years ago. Glenn were a particularly great underage minor team. There's a guy, Stephen O'Hara, played for them. Yeah. Big unit, massive player when he was 17, 18. Where is he gone? Why is he not representing Derry at the minute? You know, that's the questions that need to be asked, and these quality players have to be playing for the Derry senior team if they're going to progress. And for me, there's too many players opting out of the Derry camp.
There was some of those stats. Like Ballon Derry won the Ulster in 2013, then Sauchnead went in that dominance. So four of the last five Ulster champions are from Derry. Four of the last six McCrory champions, which is the top colleges competition, are from Derry. There is a bit of talent there. Now, there was a few years, like it was 5 or 6, where they didn't win a game at minors, so they're probably paying for that a little bit, but they still have better players that aren't there. And at the minute, it's just people don't want to play for Derry. That's it.
That's the thing. And like Joe Brawley kind of put it down to the apathy for the style of play, and they're losing the will to live. Now, they went through a few years of that style of play. It doesn't look like it's glamorous to play with Derry. It doesn't look like they care. Paddy Bradley blames the county board. He says poor management choices. He says players don't get looked after properly. Now, if players are not looked after properly, you're going to play a defensive style of play, you don't like your manager. Mm-hmm. There's three factors that would not make me necessarily want to play for Derry.
Well, he's a particularly like sort of glaring case, because Paddy Bradley, who's soldier for Derry for what, 13, 14 years, top scorer, like, you know, getting three men poking him in the eye and pulling and dragging at him for years, and he was just not in the panel 1 year. No statement, no that he's not going to be here, no like goodbye, thank you, nothing, not even a tweet. So he was just gone, and that's it. That's Paddy Bradley's career over. So he has one glaring example, and that's probably happened a bit more. There's just so many issues. Short term wise, the management haven't taken any senior teams yet. This is their first senior job. But that's not really their problem. They have a bad team. Yeah. That's what they're working with. Long term wise, I'd say the apathy is the big one. Most people in Derry would rather the county or the club next door to them burn down than they would see Derry winning anything. Like, you know, that's the rivalry like in there. Like you even see then the sort of fallout from, I know it's going to be hostile anyway, but everyone now is just slagging the rival club and the rival players who are in there. Best players are not there, and nobody cares about it. That's
the thing. And I think the management appointment this year wasn't inspiring. Now, look, he did well with the minors. I know that, but that's not going to get every player in the county going, I'm coming in for this. Now, they needed a big name appointment. They needed to get somebody from outside that had a bit of prestige about him, even if it's a Banty McEnany. I know Banty doesn't set the world alight, but he's a big name, and he might spark enough interest and say a few things that were. That
imagine the interest
that.
If Anthony Tuttle was.
Well,
was
that would be.
He probably doesn't want to manage Derry, but what a player he was. Unbelievable player. I played under him when he was the manager of Ireland. An exceptionally good manager.
Yeah. And brilliant a very manager. Good pundit he was too.
Brilliant pundit. So he knows the game inside out, but and he's a huge figurehead in Derry football. Imagine he was named as the Derry manager. That would automatically, in my opinion, from the outside looking in, attract players, the best players in Derry to go towards the county team.
No, it definitely would. But even like, I mean, who are they looking for? Like, was Rory, would they not move mountains to get Rory Gallagher when he was available? Like, are they looking for these lads? Maybe Paddy Bradley's right. And are the Derry County Board just an amateur crowd that are stuck in the 90s like a lot of other county boards, and they're not able to move into this new era of professional kind of preparation and professional management, and it's disenfranchising players, and the knock on effect now is Division 4.
Derry have needed an outside manager for a long time, somebody to come in with no history, no rivals, no ties to anything, just come in and say this is the way it is, this is what we're doing, and this is how we're going to win. But they've never done that. Now they tried the whole thing to a much less extent with Damian Barton and brought in Tony Scullion alongside him, and they tried to sort of get that spirit of 93 going. But the problem there is that Barton had managed a few clubs in Derry and, you know, already loses respect then from those players and the teams that he played against, and then already have fractions from that. They've always just hired from within, and it's not worked. They needed somebody from
My point with Anthony is, you know, the last big job from my understanding that he had was the Ireland job, so surely he has no baggage there and no bad package there. So, you know, you would expect that if he wanted it and if he put his name forward for it,
you'd imagine
there would be a good positive response to that. But, you know, I wouldn't be saying that he certainly wants the job now, particularly that they're in Division 4. But if any man could demand that respect and, you know, be a figurehead of Derry football, I would imagine it would be him now.
Yeah, I think when a county's drifting like that, they need a big name appointment. Like, I mean, I criticised Mick O'Dwyer for a couple of different things as he was our manager. but at least we're drifting with good young players, and we could have been just another group of players that went along and never achieved anything. And he came in, and within 1 year we went from being hammered by Meath in the qualifiers in a Moor Park, humiliated by 18 points, to winning Leinster.
Yeah.
Same group of players, pretty much, except for maybe two or three that came back that had no interest under that manager. And now, we did have a very, very good crop of young players, but in 1 year you go a turn win Leinster. So if you just get a manager in, a lot of this thing in counties is getting everybody involved. Every county has the same thing. They've lads not committing, are good enough, and then you have get a bit of momentum going, and suddenly results can kind of follow. But like, I mean, that minor manager was not. I don't. He might be a good manager, but if you're Owen Bradley and you're playing soccer and you go, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Will I go back to that?
Well, there's another example. Owen Bradley's still playing a high level of soccer. Why is he not playing a high level of Gaelic football?
Because he wants to play both. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I think that's the problem.
But why not let him? Why not let him?
I'd allow Owen Bradley play both. Yeah.
But this is the problem in Derry. Like, the Bradleys have never gotten the respect that they deserve in Derry. Like, you know, me saying this now will cause criticism because people don't like the Bradleys, you know, right, because they're so good and they come from different clubs. And you know, that's the real issue. They're not celebrated like they should be.
Right, okay. Listen, it's an interesting one enough, but it's a sad day for Derry football. There's absolutely no doubt about that, like what Paddy Bradley tweeted. Look, just to finish up here, lads, the new Director General has slipped in here all unnoticed. And, like, it was very, very obvious to me the timing of this. It's the day before the full last round of National League. So there's nothing about this. There's no analysis about this. There's no complaining about this. There's nothing, because we're distracted by other things. Joe Brawley was on RT Radio on Saturday Sport when it was announced, and he was complaining. He says, as expected, it's an insider, a financial man, a numbers man, not someone who's known to GA folk. What is there about Tom Ryan to suggest he can lead in such times where we need to protect ourselves against the modern world, the commercial world? What Tom Ryan will do is just more of the same. And this is an interesting one. I heard him saying months ago that if the GAA isn't broke, don't fix it. I don't know, like, there's been a lot of campaigning of trying to, next person that's going to come in and succeed Pádraig Duffy and maybe might lead the GAA in a different direction. That ain't going to happen. This is an inside man. It's a man with a finance background. And how is he going to change anything? He's on the inside. And I actually think these fellas get brainwashed on the inside. They'd listen to this podcast and they go, they haven't a clue. They don't understand how hard it is to run this. And they're brainwashed into thinking that they're doing such a good job running it and fundraising that I think they're so kind of... they're so separated from what's on the ground. They're so obsessed with needing this and thinking they're doing such a brilliant job. And a lot of the work to do and plough that money back into associations is to be commended. But there has to be a balance here. And the biggest problem with the GAA at the moment is the championship structures. It has a knock-on effect on 18-year-olds, overtraining, colleges, all that kind of thing. Mm. And that's not going to be changed now either, because, like, I mean, this fella just isn't going to rock the boat at all.
No. Well, and wouldn't it have been great to see a Liam Sheedy or a Pat Gilroy being appointed to that role?
Gilroy was interviewed, you know, and he was too radical. They didn't like what he... Because Gilroy...
But now that's the thing. Like, maybe you need to understand then who you're pitching to. Like, if you're going to there and saying,
I would have lied.
Money,
I would have lied if I was Gilroy.
You have to do that.
I
actually would have to be noble about it and go on your pursuit. If you go on and say less money, they're going to say piss off.
Yeah, because if you rise to the top in the GAA, you're in that county board congress circle. You're in that politics. You're against radicalisation. Yeah. You're in that kind of mix where you're happy the way it's going, and you're a company man. These are the fellas, and that's what you'd be concerned that Tom Ryan is just going to be like that as well, and he'll think they're doing a great job in there. He's not going to come in and say, lads, everything that I've been part of is wrong. Just not going to happen. But it's interesting, the interview board was Aegon O'Farrell and John Horan is on the interview board. Like, I mean, so what chance have you got? Then you have David Hassan. I'm not sure he's from Derry, Conan. I'm not sure he is. And you have Joan Keogh, who is an outsider. So I'm not sure, was Hassan an outsider or an insider? How did he get in onto that interview board? But that was the interview board, so I don't know, did we expect anything different? So I don't know.
Yeah, no representative from the GPA, was there?
Will his John Horan dossier just get thicker and thicker by the week?
And it's so much hope for John Horan, but disappointment is an absolute. And the Kilkenny lad getting all the jobs as well, right? Here, listen, we'll be back in a second.
You ready? I've had fellas follow me. And not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, it happens, and it does happen. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it didn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name, on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go, 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. Yeah, the big one yesterday was obviously Mayo Donegal, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to talk about defensive systems, Conan, because me and you got a little bit riled up there in part one, and like there is nuance to these, and every team does play defensively. I think that's the modern game. But I thought that the game had moved away from the Derry against Dublin that day, you know, where you're actually just conceding a kick out and you're heading back into the other team inside your 45, and you're hoping the other team comes in to the spider's web, gets turned over, and then you're breaking into it. So back in 2011, Jim McGuinness kind of shocked the GA world with these tactics, and he won an All-Ireland. Not only did he shock him in 2011, teams hadn't figured him out by 2012, and you had Cork pushing up on him, you had Kerry, they beat Cork, Kerry and Mayo. They won a really difficult All-Ireland, and they won the Ulster that year in 2012. Teams still hadn't copped onto it. I'd go so far as to say teams hadn't copped onto it until 2014, until Dublin got ransacked by them. So it took 3 or 4 years to adapt to this. Right, what are they doing here? This, like, because GA obviously is not professional, and you don't have as much time on the training ground. Or, like, I often feel sorry for managers having to do video analysis where they've got their own careers and they're trying to fit this in outside of training. It must be a really, really difficult job. Anyways, now we're in 2018, right? Tell me I'm right on that. So we're in 2018, and you have Carlo persisting with this. And you have Fermanagh persisting with this. Is there anyone? And Galway have just turned to it this year. Now, the way I look to it, Galway still have a bit of a surprise factor this year in the league, because teams are not used to this from Galway. So they're probably going into it not expecting it. They might be expecting it, but not to the extent that, do you know what I mean? That Galway are ready to go down this road. They're really ready for it. Carlo are doing it, and Carlo have had some success throughout the Division 4. My argument for this is that teams in Division 4 might not be as tactically advanced as, you know, some of the better teams, so they're probably getting plenty of turnovers. Yesterday against Leash didn't play into their hands, because John Sugrue's a good manager and they played on outside of him. Carlo end up getting 1 point, right? So this is Carlo with how many different transition drills. Like, we've laughed at Stephen Poacher, and, like, I mean, he's got the drop down transition and the triple threat and all these different transitions. Where were the transitions yesterday? I think it's a very blinkered way of playing the game. I think it's just a plan A, there's no plan B. I think if teams don't give you the oxygen, which is turnovers, the game turns into a bit of a farce of a game. And, like, I mean, I think it's such a one-dimensional game plan that there has to be more nuance to the way you play than to just go out and say, we're putting that many men in there and we're praying that this team is tactically stupid enough to give us turnovers.
Like, right, I'm not this defensive system fanboy. Like, you know, I will defend them to an extent, but it's just because I don't like that they're sort of branded as evil. You know, you do that, you're the bad guys. It's like, so what? Like, Carlo, yeah, I know you're saying they might not be sophisticated opposition, but they're promoted now. They had a good championship last year. Galway have won every game except Dublin, which they drew. They're unbeaten in the league, and we write that off as just saying, you know, it's the league.
Yeah,
you know,
but I think the test for them will be Dublin. We won't get into preview next week's game because, like, I mean, we'll be some hypocrites. But I think the test, because Dublin will be ready for them this time. Like, I mean, that was a very windy day in Salt Hill. All teams will know, and Mayo will know Galway now, because, like, I mean, sometimes in the league, and you know the way we analyse this, you might have played Galway in the league or heard Galway went defensive last week. You could say, they're trying something out. They might not necessarily. I do think teams have not been prepared for where Galway have wanted to go in the league this year.
But what, like, I read Joe Brawley's piece, and to an extent, like, you know, I agree with what we say the last few weeks, that they need to use, say, Comer more, they need to get more of their attacking players. But what's the alternative for them? Like, they haven't had 2 good years. They won Connacht 2 years ago, got hammered by Tipperary in the quarterfinal, lost Connacht last year, got hammered by Kerry in the quarterfinal. They do need to do something different. They were too open last year.
Yeah, they've gone from one stream to the other, and I actually don't want, because if Keane was here, he'd be laughing at me. It's like I'm obsessed with Galway. We'll leave Galway until Thursday. I want to talk about these defensive systems. Yeah. I honestly thought they were shot after Tyrone against Dublin, because Tyrone are such a good team. But they look so ordinary and so one-dimensional against Dublin that when Dublin got that early goal, it was almost like computer kind of was just completely, it was scrambled. So I would have thought after seeing that, teams and managers would have gone, well, yeah, you know, like, I mean, that, if you go down a couple of points, and Carlo went down against Laois, so obviously their system kind of all came, you know, now Carlo apparently had a couple of chances in the second half. They might argue they could have won the game, but I'm sure Laois had chances over the game. The point I'm making is, 8 points to 1-6. If a team wants to go down the road you want to go down on, that's the game that's going to be resulted in. And in general, my point on this is, when teams become tactically more aware, the better team playing defensively will beat the more talented team playing defensively will beat the less talented team playing defensively. So if you say defensive is my only way of doing it, it is. But if they match it, you're going to lose at that as well.
And listen, right, this is why, if I was a manager, I wouldn't play it, because Paddy Campbell, who was in the same club as Jim McGuinness, he took us in Derry as a club team, and we played that way probably more so than anybody else, so defensive. And the first point on our little circle of trust was, we absolutely must get into the lead. That's the bottom line. You have to be in the lead. No, it's not like, not a lot of teams are going to let you, they're not going to win 1-0, they're not going to defend, they will keep going, so you will have that chance to transition as much as we slag it off.
Yeah.
And I still think maybe the Croke Park thing is a bit of a red herring at the minute, because it means you have so much more space to attack as well, like, you know, in your transition. Yes, there's a lot more space to cover in defence, but all the more reason maybe to try and fill in that space. Now, if you're a manager, what would you do? Because there's so much space in the Gaelic football pitch, you have to try and plug it somewhere. Like, it's so easy as an attacker. You can do so many things with the ball in your hands. You can go by somebody. You can kick a pass. You can kick a point from far out. So we do need extra men to some extent. Can we not meet halfway and start thinking that we need to get more bodies back here to plug these gaps?
Well, like, my perfect game plan, if I was over a team, obviously you have to know by the players that you have, would be my two midfielders and one wing forward would be zonally across the half back line. And then you might move other players down to mark them, and hopefully you'd be leaving the three full backs on the other team kind of spare. You all might shuffle down one, but when you win it, your forwards are close enough to the goals that you have a structure when you win it back over. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it frustrates me that the likes of the Carlo coach and stuff, and they're talking about coaching, and, you know, like, I mean, that's an outdated coaching system you're doing. That's 2011. That's Jim McGuinness's innovation that you're just robbing, and you're coaching it by putting 14 men inside a 45 and telling, right, how many spare men do you have when you're 14 in there? So you'll have 8 spare men, and you're saying you fours only stand that side and you fours stand that side, and lads, ye tackle with intensity, and when ye tackle with intensity, I want to see you break it. I don't think that's necessarily difficult coaching. I don't like coaches getting this label of being great coaches for doing that, and they say, oh, it's a great structure. You put 14 men inside the 45 and tell me that it's... I've said this on the podcast, or maybe it was an off the wall. If you were to give me 14 rugby players, now not forwards, prop forwards, 14 backs with no history of Gaelic football, and I put 14 of them, one of them in goals and 13 inside the 45, you're not scoring against my 14 lads. I'm telling you, you're not scoring against, because they're big, strength and conditioning, they're fast, they're disciplined, I'll teach them how to tackle, hands out, push them, you know, and get that tackle in. You're not getting through that. How's that coaching? I could do that for a week with 14 rugby players. I'm telling you now, I could do it.
Well, but if the success rate is that high, why would you not do it?
Because it affects you on the other side, because the other team will mirror it, and the other team, if they're better than you, will find a way through better than you'll find a way through with your more limited players on their side. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is where you're always kind of coming up against, now the teams have found out how to play against it, it doesn't necessarily work anymore.
But and yet Galway are top of the league and Carlo are
promoted. They have the element of surprise, I'm telling you.
How are teams surprised though if it's 2018, as you say?
Well, because Galway have never played this before, and because one team, Galway could play that way against Mayo, and then Kerry might be playing Galway next and be going, well, sure, maybe they're trying something out for the Connacht, or they're bluffing Mayo. They're not, people haven't believed yet that Galway have gone down this. Now they do, but I don't think after two games, I wouldn't have necessarily believed this. They're committing to this, or are they practicing? See, this is because you can't read anything into the league, so you're not really, you know what I mean, you're not really sure what it is that their teams are necessarily doing. So I think teams haven't been going out against Galway going, right lads, you know what to expect here, this is, and working on it during the week. I think they're just kind of going out and playing Galway, which has led in, worked into their hands.
I just, like, again, I would, like, I like your system. I would, like, two midfielders have to come to the 45, absolutely, and, like, yeah, an extra forward, and you have to track runners as well, so you do end up
tracking runners and being honest is massive.
And this is why I'm, like I said about Dublin, like, Dublin aren't fundamentally a defensive team, but they have a lot of bodies back when they need them back, so they're a really good defensive team. But the pitch is still big enough. It's like you can still see the club level over the place as well. The pitch is still big enough that when a team attacks, it is easier to transition and get past them and take them back up the field. When you're only doing one burst and they're doing two, essentially, because they've come up and attack, they've lost the ball, then they have to follow you back and you've got fresher legs to go. So I just don't know how outdated it is yet. Maybe you won't win in All-Ireland anymore, but maybe that's just because of Dublin. And if the Tyrone thing is being written off altogether because they played Dublin, then every other system could be written off because teams played Dublin and didn't work.
Not necessarily Dublin, though, but, like, I mean, I don't know. Personally, I think that with that system, the teams that use it don't seem to have another way of playing. They seem to have just that, and that's it. And the game turns into a bit of a farce because, like, I mean, for Carlow to be five down and still have them in, you know what I mean, inside the 45. Now, I know they clawed it back, but there was 15 minutes with 14 men with Leash. And, like, I mean, I don't know. If you're 5 points down, like, imagine watching your own team 5 points down but still persisting going in there and praying for the turnover. It's basically, and we'll go off this now because we might be overdoing it. This whole system is based around the other team giving you the turnovers and coming into you, and surely you're actually not going out onto a field dictating anything. You're hoping you get ahead, you're hoping the other team gives you the turnovers to run into this space. You're not really coming out to dictate anything, like, you know. It's such a regressive way of playing. Do you know what I mean? I can't understand how going out in the field you'd be feeling really confident. You'd be feeling like, geez, I hope to come in now, you know what I mean. It's a lot of I hopes.
But you have played it, you've bound to have played against it yourself, and actually the team seems a lot more structured and confident with their system because you're the headless chickens running into them.
That's because not enough teams have tactics. So when a manager comes in with defensive tactics, players are delighted. Oh, we actually have a system now. Yeah. Because so many teams don't have systems. They don't. And that's been the culture of GAA. Just go out and play. And players would be running around they're running through us too easily. We don't have... Then a manager comes in and he's putting them all into zones and it all sounds great. Suddenly then, because tactics give you massive confidence. Yeah. But you can also have offensive tactics. Like, you can have a game plan that is based around stopping the opposition to an extent, but also having some sort of, like, not basing your entire game plan around hoping you get a turnover. That's all I'll say on that. Because Mayo Donegal game, it was a really good game. Mayo flew into the lead. Arguably Donegal were the better team. They played all the good football for the second half of the first half, and they seemed to, again, Jamie Brennan was outstanding. They seemed to have danger inside. They almost went back to their old defensive system in a lot of ways. They had a lot of bodies back. Mayo found it really difficult to break them down, but maybe they left two up front, but they did try and support it a little bit.
Yeah, I thought they took Jamie Brennan off prematurely.
He'd only scored a great point in the second half as
And then he missed one then off his bad foot, and then he seemed to come off after that. Like, it seemed a strange one, but yeah, Donegal, for the most part, like, they were leading for 51 minutes or something like that. They looked in control of the game. McBrady had that chance at the end. People said he should have passed it. I think he should have, but he still could have scored then on his left foot from where he was. So it sort of left the door open. But for the most part, Donegal were just whipping by them. They looked like young, fresh, enthusiastic, fitter players. And I was starting to not write off Mayo. Well, probably was thinking, Jesus, they're tired. Like, we talk about the league doesn't matter, but May 13th isn't that far away now. Like, you know, they're playing Galway then. They still have a lot of boys to get back. Are they going to be up to speed in time for how Galway are going? Like, at this stage of the year, it just seemed perilous. But then, of course, writing Mayo off, I don't know how many times you have to learn that lesson, but they just come back.
And the whole thing, of course, of Donegal, and I'm not sure, the whole talk is that they've got a lot of good young players. They've got some of the older players. You said Neil McGee's back in there. You had Frank McGlynn back in. Leo McLoone has played all the league. Michael Murphy's come back late. The way I look at Donegal, and you say, right, they need to find that balance. They've played seven league games, and I'm not sure he's much further down along the line of knowing his best team, or you know what I mean? Yeah. How they, I know there's a lot of debate about Michael Murphy. He played at centre forward and went all over the field, but like, I mean, I don't even want to get into that debate because that's nobody's right or wrong in that kind of scenario.
They need him out and in.
Yeah, and I think if you've got Jamie Brennan, he's a great, honest runner, and he's fast, and he can take his man on, and you have, obviously, Paddy McBrearty. I think those two are dangerous enough in there anyways. I don't think Michael Murphy fits as much with them. I think you have a nice balance between those two lads in there. But Audra McNeilish, Thompson has been in and out. McNeilish has been really good. He was quiet yesterday. I'm not sure what his team is, or I'm not even 100% sure of what their exact game plan, you know what I mean? I'm not sure about them.
Yeah, like, it seems to be sort of picked up a little bit from last year. Gallagher was doing well in the league and they were taking men on. They had fast enough players to take men on and they were doing that. But yeah, I don't know what their shape is exactly. Like, yesterday we were talking about Michael Murphy going over the place. Between Thompson, McFadden and Murphy, I wasn't sure who were the actual midfielders, and this is watching from TV now.
Yeah,
but maybe
it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell, yeah. Thompson did get up and support. It looks like just McBrearty's inside and Jamie Brennan's inside, and McNeilish and Thompson are kind of told to kind of support them as much as possible and or hold the half forward line, and the rest like Thompson and McNeilish are defending, but the onus is on them to give it, you know, to be up in support. McBrearty and Brennan definitely have more support up there than maybe McManus and McCarron for Monaghan last year might have had. You know, that
it's really, really weird though, because yet again they've played well. Like, they look like a good team. They look like they're getting somewhere, but yet again they fail to win and they get relegated because of it. Like, that's happened in every single game, apart from maybe the Tyrone one. They played well and they've shown a bit of hope. Like, it does, they don't look like a write off for the championship. It looks like they could do something still.
It does, but at what point do you say, right, why are we not winning still these games? Losing. Like, they were beaten well. Monaghan beat them fairly well, I think.
Monaghan as well. Monaghan and Tyrone beat
them. Did a few spirited wins, but like, I mean, if this is Donegal, like, in good shape for this league, and they're getting spirited wins, and they're playing the, you know, Kerry team and Dublin teams that are not at full throttle during the league, I don't know, you could actually paint a picture that Donegal are almost gallant losers now, whereas that winning mentality that was there for the last 5 or 6 years is eroding. You know what I mean? Like, that they're actually an entertaining, more of an entertaining team, but not a winning, a winning team.
Losing's a habit and all that, and once it gets into the melting pot and you've a history of losing, you're going to think you're going to lose it again.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. All right, up next we'll have a look at performance of the weekend.
Doherty, who's a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your program.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team, too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years, they're ready for them. I'm going to go with them, yeah.
Yeah, performance of the weekend, Conan, and I'm giving Offaly the first performance of the weekend. So they went away to Westmeath. Now, Westmeath obviously resting players. Heslin didn't play and a few more because they had nothing to play for. And interestingly, I presume Down will end up beating Tipperary in the last game, because Tipperary won't have, that's been played next year or next week. I never actually mentioned that all the league games are ending next week. The Aprils are for clubs. Like, they've just scrapped games. They've just, you know, and that, those Tipperary, Down, Meath, Loud games are being played next week when the finals are on. So they're all, it's all, and the Antrim, Leash and the few that are dead rubbers, they've just said good luck to them. So the GAA will argue that they've completely saved face here and everything's grand.
Hurling's the weekend after that as well. 2 weekends in April gone.
Oh, the Hurling's the weekend after that, yeah. The Hurling's the weekend after that. The Offaly, they lost their first 4 games, then their next 3, they got 5 out of 6 points. So they beat Wexford, they drew with Sligo. They should really have beaten Sligo, they were leading at the very end, and then they beat Westmeath in the last game. Stayed up by the skin of their teeth after staying up by beating Leash and sending Leash down last week. So they're a Division 3 team, but only just.
It's a classic save yourself from relegation story. Like, you get the points then when all our teams aren't as bothered and teams are playing weekend teams. I saw, like, there's a lot of theories going around last night as to why Derry went down. Some people were complaining about Westmeath playing a weekend team against Offaly, but just beat Sligo if you were Derry and stay up. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's the hard luck stories, and it is all like the look of playing a team that has nothing to play for the last game, but that's nobody's fault. That's just the way it works. Clare, performance of the weekend, not performance of the weekend, performance of the league, arguably, for Clare, because I'd say all of us picked Clare to go down out of Division 2. We'll have to listen back to it. We'll do that maybe when I come back from holidays. But Clare finished third in Division 2 on 8 points, and I think they'll stay third because, like I said, Down will probably be Tip, because Tip are on 7 and they've nothing to play for now. So you'd imagine Liam Kearns, who's played a settled team right throughout the league, will probably play, you know, whatever lads haven't got games, and Down have to win because they still have a slight chance of avoiding relegation if Loud do them a favour and beat Meath. But Clare finished third in Division 2. It's an absolutely fantastic achievement by them.
Clare are a good team. Like, it seems to be in the Championship when they start turning it on, everyone starts appreciating it. But then when it comes back to the league, it's almost like, I don't want to keep talking about Derry, but if people talk about Derry because of the name and they used to be a good team, we look at Clare and like, they didn't really be a good were a good team for the last 10 years, but now they do have a good team. Like,
yeah.
Remember Sen and Connell was in here raving about them 2 years ago? That's when they started all these Championship performances. So I'm not really that surprised. Well, I am surprised I tipped them for relegation. I'm going completely back in it.
Just rewind quickly. Right, we'll get more into players here now. Owen Ban Gallagher. So he's played outstanding yesterday. He almost reminds me as a slightly smaller version of Lee Keegan. He has that kind of speed and engine that seems to just never kind of stop. He's just able to break lines, and he's got that lovely explosive pace, and is able to finish as well. So he's playing kind of cornerback. It's hard to tell, obviously, on the television. So, like, I mean, if he's scoring points like that, maybe wing back is the best position for him. Maybe him one side and Ryan McHugh the other side. What a nice, tasty two wing backs that would be. I think that's something Donegal need to add into this game plan, is the attacking halfbacks. They obviously have it in Ryan McHugh. Put Ban Gallagher on the other side. That's a lot of danger there, you know, and they can easily get up and support these two fellas, because like we always say, and Lee Keegan said on the podcast here, that when the ball goes into Andy Moran, he can commit and he can make his run from there. So like the same with Donegal, now that they're trying to kick it into the two men inside, Ryan McHugh and Ban Gallagher, they just run without the ball. They just know that's going to be delivered in there, take that chance, and then they're off their shoulder, and you know what I mean, and that's nice football.
The way Anthony Thompson and McGlynn and Lacey used to do it, like, you know, like those famous goals against Mayo, was Thompson was right up with Murphy at those times. Him coming from halfback as well. He got man of the match yesterday, Gallagher, and I remember thinking it was a bit premature because he was the one that got taken on then by Kevin McLaughlin to score, but as it turns out, McLaughlin took 13 steps to get by him.
Yes, he did. He took two before the sidestep as well. We won't get back into that. But just on the McBrearty thing, like, I mean, McBrearty's was a mortal sin, really, because I know that he should have passed it. But like, you can get wrapped up, and when you're a finisher with the ability of Paddy McBrearty, I don't always blame him, because if it went over, everyone would be saying, oh, didn't he finish it? Sure, isn't that the sign of a great player to take on the responsibility? Yeah. So when you miss and shoot, you should have passed it. When you shoot and score, you've taken on responsibility. So there's no right or wrong answer on this. But the big mistake, and it's a cardinal sin, was him not kicking it dead, because he's experienced enough to know that here, I'm lettering this, and if this goes over, great. If it goes wide, we're set up, and we won't let them kick it out quickly. That was his mistake. Shooting wasn't his mistake, but putting it into the goalkeeper's hands, I know he didn't mean to, but like, I mean, it was a lack of concentration, because that often happens. Kick it in the goalie's hands, in my opinion, it's a lack of concentration.
A wide is as good as a score at that stage
of
the game.
It is, but that's a cliche, but it's true.
No, and like, you're right, if he had scored as well, they would have said, not even just that he's a finisher, it was like the sensible choice to put it over and end the game 2 points up, game over, one attack left.
Clutch player.
Yeah.
Took on the responsibility. there was three men around, but he took it upon himself to stick it over.
and the way he's going, 9 times out of 10, he probably would have put it over.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't really blame him too much. Conor Loftus got a bit of credit yesterday. He scored a lovely point from play.
Really sharp.
Yeah, really sharp. Really got a lovely, a lot of pace. Mm. Like, he's capable of doing some stupid things as well. Like, I mean, he gave a lovely ball to Andy Moore, and he's got, I'm on the fence still with Loftus, if I'm being honest. I'm not sure where he fits into the Mayo team. I still think he's a good sub in for Andy Moore when he gets tired with 15 minutes. Outside of that, while he did very well yesterday, and realistically he's been on the go for the last couple of years, and that's the first time you've kind of said he's played really well.
Yeah,
you know, so I'm not going to be sold on him after one game.
It's the same thing though that Mayo have. If you look at the forward line, it picks itself, really. It's just Dermot O'Connor, Kevin McLaughlin, Aidan O'Shea, Killian O'Connor, Andy Moore, and Jason Doherty.
That's the team, yeah.
Unless one of them drops into midfield like O'Shea, then you can't really fit anybody else in.
No, I don't think so. Conor Loftus might be, I don't know him well, but like, he has all the tools to be a good player. Like, he has all the attributes. He's got great pace, he's got a bit of size about him, and he has accuracy. Like, he's on the freeze. So maybe if you say to Loftus at the start of the league, I'm giving you every league game, I don't care how you play, I believe in you. Yeah. Is he a belief type of player? I don't know enough about him, but like, I mean, he has the raw material to be, you know, a really top player.
Maybe that's where the free taking duties came in yesterday, because Jason Doherty's well able to take frees.
No, Doherty made a balls of them against Dublin. He had a nightmare on frees against Dublin. I'd say that's when he was pulled off them, maybe.
But that's a big, I remember reading Ashley McConville's book, and he was on about being given that responsibility in his very first league game, and thinking, holy shit. But because he got that responsibility, then suddenly he has to grow straight away and take on.
Yeah. Okay, we have to mention Jack McCarron's goal. I didn't realise, I didn't even see on Twitter there's even a debate that he didn't mean this. He absolutely meant it. Is there people saying he didn't? I know by your smile you think he didn't. Yeah. Did you not?
I don't know. I just looked at it and thought, ah, come on, did he mean that?
He looked up, did
sort
he
sort of
not?
Like Daniel Flynn last year. I was like, ah, come on, did the point.
That was different. But I was sure, and you look at the positioning of the goalie coming for it, he was way out. And McCarron looked at him. Like, I think this is not even, I can't believe people wouldn't. And Jack McCarron is that touch of class. It's not like, I don't know, Darren Hughes, for example. No disrespect to Darren Hughes, but he wouldn't be known for finesse. Like, this is Jack McCarron we're talking about. He absolutely meant it.
Defender on the line, he was on the ground when he got it. I don't know, it just seemed like he just hit it.
I can't believe it. You're actually just spoiling for a row with me here today. That was absolutely a goal. Rory Began, you wanted to mention for performance of the weekend, and I saw you put up a few clips on Twitter, and like, geez, there's some sensational bullets coming off the outside of his boot.
And that's not even from his kickouts, which were amazing, but like, he is their playmaker now. Like, they're using him as an extra player coming out of defence. There were some times where players actually opted to give it to him rather than take it on themselves, because they thought, he can do more damage with me. And kicking 60, 70 yards right in front of players to run on. Like, he was a real creative player for them.
The four examples you put up on Twitter are unbelievable passes. Yeah. Like, I mean, he has a sensational distribution, and he has that outside of the boot, and you know, he's been that sweeper keeper for them. We talked about that a little bit already, and that's something to really look forward to with Monaghan in the championship, is this more you know, advanced role for Began.
Yeah, and like, it does, you know, we're talking about like Jim McGuinness catching everybody by surprise. This is a whole new, like, Stephen Cluxton took the goalkeeping role onto a whole other level a few years back, but now this is going further. You saw the one he was running down the right wing with the ball, gets to about the 45 and then kicks it.
Yeah,
like, he is just like, it's like a sevens goalkeeper now.
Yeah,
where he's so important coming out of it.
Yeah, no, listen, that's something to look forward to, and maybe in 5 years time Poacher might start. I know I'm actually being lousy on him, because I think Carl will do a version of that with a goalkeeper. I'm not too sure. When I get a bee in my bonnet, I really go to town.
Carlo, do you do that with the goalkeeper?
They
use him as an extra man out of defence.
An extra man out of defence, but maybe not out to the 45 with the distribution. Maybe that might come in 4 or 5 years' time. I'm looking forward to that league game with Leash and Carlo. Could actually see them in the flesh and see what we're talking about, so you can make a proper decision on them. So performance of the weekend is going to Kevin McLaughlin, even though we talked about him at the top of the show. Serious balls, took 13 steps. Took 13 steps for Mayo. He'll be heralded in Mayo for all. I'd take 13 steps for Leash. I'm sure you would for Derry to keep them up. A proper underrated player, because some players are so underrated they're overrated. Yeah, I think Kevin McLaughlin is a proper underrated player. So he's getting performance the weekend. So maybe we'll kind of lift his profile with that performance the weekend out of the underrated. Yeah. Category. Right, listen, that's always time for. We'll be back on Thursday and we'll preview all the three league finals. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.